Mini episode 125 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to mini episode number 125 of the FDH Lounge. It is our true privilege to have on one of our greatest guests on the program today. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris, and we've got a big one for you. This gentleman has been on the program with us twice before, and it's great to be able to have him on for our milestone 125th mini episode. Of course, the two times that he was on previously were our full-length episodes that we were doing. We had 152 of those in the books before we started doing these in bite-sized pieces. He is one of pro wrestling's biggest legends, and but we're going to start with him, as we did last year, by talking hockey. That is a particular passion of his. We like to do this with some of our guests. We find it to be very interesting to talk to them about other areas of great passion, aside from the core ones that we generally tend to think of. For example, when we had Tommy Lasorda on the program, we discussed with him winemaking and wine importing. We talked to Rat drummer Bobby Blotzer about going to the Friars Club with Milton Berle. So we like to go a little bit off the beaten path and explore some other interests with some of our more interesting and high-profile guests that we have on the program. He is, as we said, somebody who has a tremendous interest in pro hockey. He is the one-time owner of the pro hockey team, the Calgary Hitmen, the team, of course, named after him. He is friends with many NHL players of this generation, and they're really the past few generations. So he has friendships far and wide in the world of professional hockey. But his claim to fame is that he is one of the all-time greats in his main line of work. 20 years ago this fall, as a matter of fact, he became the first real, I would say, pure worker to become WWF champion once Hulk Hogan had taken the promotion national in 1984, once the WWF expansion period was underway. Again, Randy Savage, we've talked about this previously on the show, he was the first great worker post-Hogan, but Savage also had a real over-the-top persona, similar to Hogan, similar to the Ultimate Warrior. Our guest today, the first real down-to-earth persona, and the first one markedly devoid of steroids in an era where, again, everybody had to be larger than life. 1992 marked a reversal of that tide in very dramatic fashion, and our guest today represented that very definitively. Again, 20 years ago this fall, and you can see the ripples to this very day. Part of his legacy certainly is in the fact that when you look at CM Punk and Daniel Bryan fighting for the WWE Championship, again, so much of that goes to the feet of what our guest did 20 years ago. And again, he was joined in that period of time by Shawn Michaels. They actually did a very interesting DVD that I just saw recently tracing the history of their rivalry. But of course, our guest today, he came first. He was on top before Shawn Michaels was. So you've always got to kind of mention him first when you're talking about that. Those wrestlers of that generation, and again, how they influenced the CM Punks of the world and Daniel Bryan and others that had come even before them. I'd say Chris Jericho, our guest today, his career overlapped with Jericho, but he was certainly an influence on him. He was an influence on some of the younger guys when he was in the business, and he's an influence on so many of the top guys to this very day. And I'm speaking, of course, of our guest. He is known as the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be, Bret the Hitman Hart. It's a true honor and pleasure to have him back on the show for the third time. We, of course, had him on previously, November of 2009, and about at this time last year, actually just prior to the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And we're speaking to him now with game one of the Stanley Cup final underway. So we really, truly appreciate his indulgence in getting on with us. We had a little bit of a technical issue before. I am completely in the dark as to what had happened with that, but I am very, very grateful for his indulgence. We had a great conversation with him two times previously, and I know that the third time will likewise be a charm. I speak, of course, of the legendary Brett the Hitman Hart. Brett, it's a true honor and pleasure to have you back on the FDH Lounge, sir. Thank you for joining us.
It's always a pleasure to join you guys again.
Well, it's really great to be able to do it. Last year, as I said, about this time we were talking to you, the playoffs were just about to get underway. And as we, of course, mentioned in the setup here, just a huge passion for you. I know personally as a one-time owner of the Calgary Hitmen and all the friendships that you have in the world of professional hockey. I'd like to start just on a kind of general note, wherever you'd like to take it. Your thoughts on the playoff season thus far here. I mean, there have been so many big things that happened. You had the last four cup winners going out in the first round. You had the President's Trophy winner going out in the first round. All the big fights and the big hits, the controversies, again, a lot of those were in the first round. You had Vancouver, unfortunately for the country of Canada, extending their streak of futility as far as getting the Stanley Cup back. What have been the more memorable moments in your mind leading up to these finals?
Well, you know, I had a feeling personally that we were going to see a new champion this year. It was going to be a new team, someone that's going to rise out that no one had seen before. And LA seems to be, you know, fit the bill, since the beginning of the playoffs.
They have just been incredible as they've come along. It's been kind of funny to us at this program to kind of watch it because everybody's been touting it. Oh, they're the 8 seed. They kind of came from nowhere. But I don't know about you, Brett, but they kind of remind me of the New York Giants that were 9-7 and really kind of underachieved during the season and tuned it up in time for the Super Bowl. You know, that was the real Giants then. It looks like we're seeing the real Kings now, aren't we?
Well, you know, I think a lot of teams, you know, like it seems like it was really a pretty close gap between a lot of the teams this year. It wasn't so wide ranging. I thought it was pretty tight going into the playoffs. And when you look at from the top to bottom, from eight to number one seed sort of thing, it wasn't that much of a difference sometimes. And LA, I think got real strong as the season went on. And I think from about New Year's on, they were pretty solid. And Sutter's a good coach. You know, they got him. He's a smart guy that probably took a team that had all the pieces and seems to have kind of been lucky. And they look really solid. They look big. They look quick. The goaltender looks unbelievable. You know, the whole team looks real strong. And in saying that, I also say, you know, on the other hand, you know, you can't count out Brodeur. And there's just the magic of having a guy that old. That much experience, you know, a whole team is to rally around this sort of, Babe Ruth type of player that may never come along quite like that again. And, you may see a big upset here. You can't count New Jersey out at all. But I just sense that LA's got the size.
I agree completely, Brett. My sense, I saw that you tweeted this earlier today, LA and six. I had the same sense, LA and six with Jonathan Quick. Being my pick to be Conn Smythe Trophy winner. I want to follow up on a few things you said because I like your insight on the seeds. It almost seemed kind of random who got seeded what number. I mean, you had a team like San Jose that was a 7 seed playing St. Louis, and if I remember correctly, I think you're good friends with Joe Thornton, so you had to be following that one kind of closely. They were a 7 seed to St. Louis, and that must have seemed kind of weird because San Jose is the battle-tested playoff team, and you know, St. Louis is a team that got back into the playoffs for the first time this year. Here they were the 2, San Jose was the 7, and I think that kind of backs up what you were saying about how random it seemed like the seeding was.
Well, I felt that it was going to be, you know, the reason I picked the way I did was more thought of like it could go anywhere. You don't really know who's going to do good, and it really was so wide range. I think I picked the Predators and the Sharks. Because I kind of friends with some of the guys on both teams, but in the end, it's like when I see where it is now, it doesn't surprise me that LA got in. You know, they were looking really strong going into the end of the season. You know, they just looked really strong going in, and they played really solid. The goaltending's been, it's been a goaltender's playoff. I mean, the games have been so close, and the goaltending and the whole sort of, I think it's got to be a salute to the whole NHL for putting together such a great playoff. It's been a really good playoff for someone sitting at home like me and enjoying every game or trying to. It's been really entertaining. It's been very close.
It's been
every
amazing.
Game's close. Yeah, it's been a great ride. Now, you know, I'll be sorry to see the playoffs end in a few days and be back to baseball.
yeah, it's going to be hard to wave goodbye to these games here because they've been tremendous. I want to follow up on something else that you said too when you were talking about Brodeur being kind of like a Babe Ruth figure in the world of hockey. And this was something that I wanted to ask you about in particular. I know that the way that things went with you because of the aftermath of the match with Goldberg, that you didn't really get a prolonged kind of twilight to your career, but you did have a little bit of a period in your career later on, and you were the established legend, and you saw the young guys kind of coming up in there. Is there a part of you that identifies with Brodeur? You're both among the most celebrated citizens in the country of Canada. He's a legend. He's trying to fight off the young guys. Is there a part of you that looks at him and can kind of identify personally with him?
Well, I only thing I can say, I'd be quite honored to be on the same pedestal as Brodeur, but he's been around for a long time, and I think for a lot of my career, I followed him, and I sort of followed in my own kind of interesting little way, kind of followed the New Jersey franchise from its very beginning, I think, and being on the road and being in the same dressing rooms and when I used to be in the WWE back years ago, we'd be in the Spectrum, and we'd be in the the Meadowlands and different buildings, the Garden all the time. You'd see the East Coast teams kind of all the time. You get to know the Flyers, and you get to know the Bruins, and you get to know a lot of the teams. And it was kind of cool because they'd be getting ready to play, and we'd be packing up and leaving. And sometimes the other way around. And there was a sort of a mutual respect as far off as the two different worlds of like hockey and wrestling were.
Oh, absolutely, because there's so many guys at the top level that are following the other profession and vice versa. And speaking of, and there was another question I wanted to ask you about, too, in terms of your perspective from both worlds, from pro wrestling and from hockey. I would imagine that you have to have a very unique perspective. Again, we were hearing an awful lot in the first round about some of the fights, the physicality, and ultimately the way that they're trying to take some of the physicality out of the game right now as far as shots to the head and trying to make the game safer. And I know that is rubbing a lot of your countrymen the wrong way, and that there's a lot of people in Canada that feel that it goes against the culture of hockey. But I have to imagine you probably have a pretty unique perspective on that as somebody who suffered through concussion issues and my guess would be that you're probably glad for anything that makes either pro wrestling or hockey safer these days.
Well, in reality, the truth about pro wrestling is that nobody really tries to hurt each other for real.
Sure.
Nobody's trying to injure anybody.
Sure.
And I hope it stays that way in hockey, that it shouldn't be like that. You got to crack down on these headshots and some of them. If you can, there's no sense being a great hockey star if you got your brains are like mush when your career's over. And there has to be some kind of protection in place for the wrestlers, or the hockey players and wrestlers, for their brain injuries and the things that can happen in playing the sport. And the science today is so good that they're able to diagnose head injuries and stuff like. A lot better now than they were, say, 20 years ago, even 10 years ago. But they're still misunderstood, misdiagnosed all the time. And people think, people are faking concussions and things like that. But from first-hand experience, it's a tough injury to, if you're lucky, you can come back from it. And for me, there was never any chance of ever coming back from it. It was an injury that definitely for sure ended my career.
Oh, sure. And just to clarify what I meant about the pro wrestling part, and I, if I remember correctly from your book, I think you had kind of railed against some of the excesses of quote-unquote garbage wrestling and some of the things that tended to get thrown into pro wrestling back in the 90s there. And it's at the point now where, you know, obviously when you were back in the WWE last year, you saw how it is now about how they've banned the unprotected chair shots to the head and some other things like that to try to ultimately do what they can to make it safer and maybe try and get away from some of the excesses. We had on the show previously, I'm sure you're well familiar with him, Christopher Nowitzki, somebody who used to be in your profession. And when you're talking about the science and trying to diagnose these things, that's the first guy I think of, some of the work that he's done in these ways.
Well, there was a time, you know, years ago in wrestling that it became sort of entertainment to actually, for guys to hurt each other, you know, wrestlers who went there. I think kind of started in ECW a little bit where guys would go in there and do like sticks and stuff like that, just beat each other senseless and hurt each other. And you know, someone would pay them a few bucks for it, but it was like hardly worth it. It was great entertainment and guys getting, you know, like barbed wire matches and, you know, after a while, it's like you put your body on the line so much that you get hurt so much that it's after a while, it just becomes kind of, there's no art to that. There's no skill to it. They just get beat up and hurt. And, you know,
very well said. Yeah. And you've been very eloquent on that over the years, certainly as far as talking about that, you know, you're supposed to make it look good, but you're not supposed to be in a position of, hurting the guy that you're in there with or being hurt yourself. And, you know, that was something that I think people always looked at you as being exemplary in that regard. In the introduction, when I was setting up bringing you on here, Brett, talking a little bit about, and if it doesn't seem possible to me, I'm sure it doesn't seem possible to you, 20 years ago this fall, you taking the WWF championship for the first time, and really what a groundbreaking thing that was. The first guy after Hulk Hogan to be in the mold of being a, you know, a pure wrestler. It was when they were trying to get, you know, weed out the steroids and everything like that. And I'm just interested for your thoughts on your legacy, because when I look at things like Daniel Bryan and CM Punk having this amazing program that they're having right now, I know both guys have cited you as an influence. So I'm sure you've got to feel really good looking at those guys and thinking that you probably helped pave the way in some small way, at least for them to get to the top.
Well, you know, I think from a lot of the guys from my generation, not just me, but guys like Mr. Perfect and Bulldog and Dynamite Kid, guys like even Shawn Michaels, and just some of the smaller guys took control of the business. And I would even say Steve Austin, different guys, took control of the direction of the wrestling business back in, let's say, the mid-90s when it was sort of the after that. Like, I think if you look at, there's a real change in the wrestling business from WrestleMania 8 when I fought Piper, and Hogan was around, and Road Warriors and Psycho Sid, and everybody was all jacked up on steroids in those days, and the whole business was evolved around the guys that were muscle men like Warrior, and by SummerSlam of that same year, half those guys were gone, and by Survivor Series of the same year, they were all gone, and it was a whole new era. Wrestling had moved from the sort of the dinosaur muscle guys, the steroid guys that had these great, magnificent bodies, but didn't really do any kind of great wrestling. And people were left with guys like me to sort of carry the flag and actually keep the wrestling industry kind of moving forward. And we did. We made wrestling the priority. And I think you look back at the guys that really were the workers of that era, from myself and Mr. Perfect and a lot of those guys. I think we really, in a lot of ways, picked up the torch and carried the wrestling in a whole different direction, for a better direction.
Absolutely, and it was certainly, you know, very enjoyable for those of us that were watching that. And I have to say, there was a whole new dimension, I feel like, that was brought to the understanding of that. The DVD that you recently did with Shawn Michaels and Jim Ross as the moderator, when you guys were exploring the feud that unfortunately kind of became a real life feud, and as it were. And I can't help but think in this day and age with social media, I mean, things got as bad as they did with you guys back then, minus Twitter, Facebook, and these other things here. When you look at guys now, and I think they're trying to do the right thing, trying to stay in character a good part of the time in social media and trying to build up their characters and the programs that they're involved in. But do you see any kind of a danger to that of guys on there, of any kind of escalation that could happen, such as happened between you and Sean, with guys possibly going back and forth on Twitter and maybe misunderstandings coming out of that?
You know, it's always possible. It's a business that's based on a lot of manipulation and backstabbing sometimes, and it's been a thread of the business since the very beginning. You know, this happening, the stuff that happened, the screw job that happened with me wasn't the first time. You know, there was wrestlers back in the 20s and 30s that got screwed over way worse than I did. You know, some of them were lucky they left with their lives, kind of stuff thing. And you know, it's just, you know, the wrestling business has always been sort of a tough run business, but run from the inside out. And you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's always really just looked like funhouse mirrors to those of us who've never been in it. It's just such a fascinating, opaque kind of a world to understand, and that's where it's so great to be able to get some of the tidbits on what really goes on from guys like you, because you know it seems clear that unless you're in or have been in the business, that you'll never really fully understand it in that way. And along those lines, in terms of the thought process, something that I found fascinating again from the DVD was, I think it's very clear that you are sincere in what you've said about, you know, you came to terms with Sean, you know, you managed to put the past behind him, that he is a different person now with having found Christ and everything like that. But what I was fascinated by in watching that was your recall on some of the things that happened from back in the 90s. I mean, you're somebody that has had concussion issues, the stroke. Even those of us that have been fortunate enough not to have that happen, I feel like maybe couldn't recall these kinds of things. So I'm fascinated by the thought process on that, Brett. I mean, these are clearly things that you still remember about what happened then, but I guess would it be fair to say you remember, but it just doesn't have the capacity to wound you as it once did?
Well, I remember it all, but I've moved on past it. You know, you have to... You know, I always say this, but it's just the truth, is that when you've suffered a stroke like what I suffered in 2002, you learn over time that the things that you carry around and all the grief and the, like, you know, when I suffered the stroke in 2002, I was still grieving pretty hard over my brother Owen's death, and Bulldog's death just happened a few weeks earlier, and there was a lot of dissension in the family, and there's a lot of strife and going on in my daily sort of routine, and you know, it's the same thing with Sean. Sean bothered me for years, what happened with Sean, and I'll never forget what happened. I'll never forget how I feel. I wanted to express myself and tell everyone how I felt and what exactly happened, at least in my words. And I was able to write my book, and I was able to do that. And I remember I kind of finished and wrote the book, and it was over, and it was done, and I made my point, and most people appreciated my point, and you know, it was kind of like over, except for everyone just sort of had tagged me as a guy that was still not over what happened. And the more I thought about it, I said, you know, the best thing I can do to move on is to really move on and, to kill this thing and put it to rest and, make a truce with Sean. And I tried for quite a long time to, you know, make some kind of connection with Sean where I could at least explore whether it would be worth trying to make any kind of truce with him, you know. And then... through different channels, we eventually did get there, but I think it was good for him, it was good for WWE, it was good for me, and above all, it was good for wrestling fans. And I feel today in my everyday sort of routine, I feel a lot less strife, and I'm glad I went back. And anybody that sort of goes, oh, he sold out and he went back, or he didn't do the right thing, or he should never have gone back, they don't know what they're talking about. I did it for my own peace of mind, you know. And that's the most important. That's all that matters.
Well, that's an excellent explanation of the thought process, Brett, because, yeah, I mean, it did seem like an evolution over the years. I mean, you went back, you did the Hall of Fame thing, and then years later actually returning to the company for WrestleMania, which was very interesting. And one of the names that you mentioned a few times there, of course, Davey Boy Smith. A question that our senior producer Steve Cervillo has had, and by the way, and he wanted me to mention what a thrill it was when he got a chance to meet you when you were out at Staten Island last year. He, like I, big fan of the British Bulldogs as well as the Hart Foundation from back in the day here. Thoughts on them vis-a-vis the WWE Hall of Fame? Is it something that is a tricky situation politically right now because of Tom Billington being over in England and the way that his career ended and everything like that? Or are you optimistic that anything might happen to give them a chance to get in the Hall of Fame in the next couple of years?
Oh, I'm sure that I'm sure that's just a matter of time. I think that they, you know, with Harry Smith and, you know, maybe they're just waiting for the right time to induct them. I don't see it being a real Hall of Fame without certain guys in it. And Dynamite Kid is maybe pound for pound one of the greatest wrestlers that ever put on a pair of boots, and they should be honored to have him in the Hall of Fame. And he belongs in there, and I'm sure they'll make a gesture towards him in time to get in on his own or with Bulldog Davey. They were both, you know, I don't know if anyone can say it was a greater team than the British Bulldogs. I mean, there was the Hart Foundation, and I know we had some great, phenomenal matches with those guys over the years that I think raised the bar back then in the old days. Both Bulldogs belong in there, and as do, you know, like my brother Owen belongs in there, and, you know, there's a lot of people that still belong in there, and I'm sure they'll get in eventually.
Very well said, yeah, and I understand. I'm sure there's a lot of complications that would be in the way of Owen getting in as well. But, yeah, I join you in hoping that will be possible someday because he had such an amazing career in his own right for what he was able to pack into his time in the ring there. Just like to bring this around, Brett, and just we'll check with you and see about some of the projects you've got going on. Obviously, folks can keep up with everything at bretthart.com, as we've been doing. But I know previously, one of your times on the program, you mentioned that maybe long range you had an interest in exploring some of your early days in Stampede, maybe using that as the basis possibly for a TV show or something. So just overall, I'd like to get a sense of what's going on with you and what are some of the projects that you're really focusing the most on these days.
I'm working on a lot of different things at different times. I've kind of I've been working on a children's book for about 6 months. And it's something that it's more just a sort of a hobby than it is anything else, but I'm sort of you know, just forming my thoughts. I've been writing a book about Stampede Wrestling or writing a story about it that could be used for television. Is they're all major projects, but I do think about them all the time, but I don't have anything in the works right now. I would like to see you know, possibly I do eventually see a second book coming out, but I don't see it coming for quite some time because I've been kind of waiting for things to happen to write about that would be worth, you know, including in a book like that. You know, my first book was so much about my wrestling career and my wrestling life. It's kind of, now I don't have so much of that wrestling career and wrestling life, but I do have a lot of interesting stories to tell that happen still even every day. So I just sort of bide my time and sort of keep notes and sort of wait for the day to sort of come that I decide to put into words some of the thoughts that have come to me in the last 10, 15 years, not so much about my wrestling career.
Well, storytelling always was a forte of yours, Brett. I think I saw a quote somewhere where I think Vince McMahon had referred to you as the best storyteller in the ring that he'd ever seen, and I think there's so many of us out here that would concur with that. I know I've mentioned to you previously, I saw your first pay-per-view title defense against Shawn Michaels at the Survivor Series in 92, and just, you know, I've been impressed with your career ever since. It's real, and much before then, I should say, as well, too. But a real pleasure to have you on the show, as always, Brett. And it would be a pleasure to do it again, sir. Just best of luck with everything you've got going on.
All right. You guys take care, and we'll talk again.
Oh, thank you so much, Brett. I appreciate you joining us, and thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Mini episode number 125 with the legendary Bret the Hitman Hart.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.